Hello, everybody. Welcome into episode 26 of the 2QB Experience. This one is the Dak Prescott Experience. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Greg. Greg Smith, at Greg Sauce on Twitter. On the other line, your other host, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs. Josh, what's happening?
Hey, happy Halloween. We're recording. As kids are knocking on doors, ringing doorbells, so I'm not responsible for loud noises in the background. But hey, it's good. I'm chatting with you.
I'm ready to be spooked. That's all I'll say. we record on Mondays as usual, you know, during the Monday Night Football game. So we'll be maybe checking in on that a little periodically. But I kind of wanted to kickstart our conversation tonight, Josh, with a general question for you, because I was updating my rankings for the site earlier today, the site being 2QBs.com. And I found myself really struggling with, or not struggling with, but really being surprised at how I was starting to reevaluate certain players. And I'm wondering whether you've updated your ranks or not. Are there, what quarterbacks for you are kind of moving up and moving down in your estimation, like for the rest of the season? We're talking redraft only, ROS rankings. Like, what quarterbacks are you more keen to maybe try to target in a trade? Which ones are you down on? Where are you at?
I think it's a great question. I've gone back periodically, probably about every other week. I go in and look at rest of season rankings. The one that really leaps to mind, and I'll look through for some other names, but Russell Wilson,
yep,
who I went back and forth on my top four, who they, like, what order they should be in this year, but it was always the same four, and Wilson could have been anywhere from one to four, and he's just dreadful this year, and there's no sign it's getting any better any of these weeks. And every week I've gone back, I feel like I push him further down, and it's still higher than he's scoring.
Well, and it's a shame, too, because it definitely seems like it's 100% injury-related. And like, he just doesn't have the same spring in his step. He doesn't look quite as good. His offensive line is a mess, which exacerbates the problem. I'm not sure where he totally belongs rest of season, because we're hearing reports now that, you know, his ankle braces are coming off. And, oh, things are going to get better. But, I mean, he couldn't do it against the Saints. Like, what should we really expect going forward? Realistically, I don't know. I dropped him all the way down to QB 13 rest of season, behind guys like Roethlisberger, who we don't even know is healthy, behind Tyrod, behind Phillip Rivers, Jameis Winston, Derek Carr. Like, these are names that I never would have ranked ahead of Russell Wilson at the beginning of the season. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, my last update, I had him at QB 11, but I think you're right. I think I probably still need to be pushing him down further. It just, you can't trust him. Like you said, maybe he flips a switch and the health comes back, but it's been so ugly. I know we talked about him last week. I'm still optimistic it will turn around, but I can't keep ranking him as if it will when we aren't seeing any indication.
No, you're exactly right. It's the same reason why I'm down on other guys like Eli, like Blake Bortles. Despite his big week this past week, like, Bortles is a guy who, when you watch him play, you just don't see a good quarterback. You don't see the guy who's going to give you that consistent production you're looking for in a 2QB league. Are there any other guys, maybe guys that have risen up for you recently, either based on like performance or upcoming schedule?
The reverse, Eli is a great call. We can come back to him. He's really fallen, like you said. Rising, Ben Roethlisberger is a name I've pushed up. So obviously the injury situation remains to be seen. It looks like he was practicing today, Monday, with the first team, so he's probably back this week. If he is, he's had a much better year than I expected. I thought he'd be good, but I think he's kind of a top five guy now if he's healthy. And I don't have a reason to rank him much lower if he's healthy. He's got the pieces he needs for that to be a really good offense around him.
Yeah, I struggle with him because of the health questions. I know that the original timetable for his injury didn't have him coming back this week. I suspected originally when we heard this news, and even last week, I was assuming that Landry Jones would start at least one more game. And I still think that's, you know, in play. That could still happen. But, you know, if Roethlisberger does come back this week, how healthy is he? Can he stay healthy if he's not quite as mobile as he used to be or any of that? I don't know. I can't quite bump him up into that top five, even like top eight range. I do have him at QB 12 right now, just ahead of Wilson. But yeah, if he comes out this week and proves that he is, you know, healthy enough to play at 85 to 95% of his capabilities, he'll probably jump up into that, you know, top seven, top eight for me. He's a good name to look at. Another guy that I've really come around on is Derek Carr. And watching that game he played yesterday, as we talk about on the podcast all the time, I get to watch a lot of Raiders games. And man, like, he just looks good, not only from like a like a fantasy scoring and a stats perspective, but you watch him throw and the throws he's making are pretty legit. Now, he doesn't look like that on every throw. He's not Aaron Rodgers, he's not Drew Brees, but he makes those throws that are, you know, difficult but impressive often enough to make me think that, you know, he does belong in that top 10 at the position.
Yeah, Carr has likewise surprised me. He had just an amazing week. I mean, for fantasy right now going into the Monday night game, he's QB1, and I had Tom Brady in my home league QB3, and I played against Carr and Rodgers QBs 1 and 2. I ended up losing despite a high score. It was just painful.
But hey, you got me in the dynasty league, so
yeah, you've put together quite a team there. Speaking of,
hey, I think it's I inherited well. A good team is what really happened. Whoever left that team for dead was, I don't know what they were thinking. That was a nice roster.
Well, it's going well, but yeah, I completely agree with you, Carr. I think I've said on this podcast before, he is doing better than I expected. I didn't see a bad year coming, but he's really proven that he's a great fantasy asset. And as far as the NFL asset, you would know a lot better than I just from the number of games you watch. But when I do watch, yeah, it looks like he knows what he's doing. It looks like there's potential.
It seems to me that his biggest issue is probably just decision making, which he is young. You know, he could get a lot better at that. And that's why I have a lot of hope for him, because what I'm seeing now are the physical tools, and the fact that he has two great wide receivers definitely helps in that regard. But I think that he's got to be a guy that you can consider starting every week at this point, almost regardless of matchup. There's a game he has to play against Denver later this year, which would be the one that maybe I would shy away. But even then, like based upon what he's done so far, I'd have a hard time benching him. Anybody else you want to talk about? You mentioned Eli.
Yeah, Eli is just, he's been a tough one to figure out this year, because I feel like they have the passing weapons that he could be really interesting, but he's been just dreadful whenever he's on the field. And so I've moved him very far down. I mean, I've been pushing him lower and lower. I think it's at the point that I need to have him over Russell Wilson, but both of them, it's like I don't want to rank them as QB2s even, because they're so rarely in that range week to week right now. With Eli, it's harder to figure out. Like I have said, the running game seems to be a problem, so maybe that's limiting the offense's effectiveness as a whole. But with Wilson, we can kind of easily point to this injury, and he's a different quarterback when he can't move. With Eli, it's harder to put a finger on it and kind of put a timetable on when he gets better. And that really worries me, just that there is very little consistency, more so than a typical Eli year, it feels like.
Yeah. The only other guys that are really moving around a ton for me, it's mostly based on schedule. Like if I'm looking ahead and I'm trying to figure out, okay, which quarterback would I rather have for the rest of the year, maybe for someone I could target in a trade, or if I'm trying to figure out who I can trade away, looking ahead, the guys that I'm down on are Wilson, and that's more injury related like we talked about, but also Matt Stafford, like looking at his schedule coming up.
Yeah, Minnesota coming twice, I know.
Yeah, the Vikings twice. I think there's more to it than that I didn't like, if I remember correctly. I think they get, well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just those two. But I think that Jacksonville is a tougher game than some realize, despite what Mariota did to them.
Yeah, the Giants have actually been a pretty good pass defense in week 15.
And that's your semifinals. So he's a guy that I'm not like super keen on, especially because I think he played a little over his head to start the year based on an easy schedule. So like if you look at his game log and you look at what he did in the first 4 weeks versus his second 4 weeks of play, you can see the difference, right? You can see that maybe he is a little bit more the Stafford we remember and not this brand new Jim Bob Cooter elevated, you know, Stafford deity. but yeah, he's a guy who I moved down a little bit. Carson Wentz, maybe not necessarily schedule related, but again, another indication that like if you look at his first few games versus the latter games, the more recent games he's played, you can see that he is human. You know, he's been exposed a little bit. Teams are starting to figure him out. Like I know that Josh Hornsby on our side has done a lot of great work kind of showing how shallow that Eagles offense tends to throw the ball. And if you're going to be that predictable on offense, it's never a good thing. And I think that eventually they either need to, you know, let him off the leash and let him try to make some tougher throws, or he's just going to continue to get, you know, snuffed out by opposing defenses. And he's another guy that I'm down on. Now, you may be able to look at that as a buying opportunity in Dynasty, but I'm not sure. It kind of probably depends on your league.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk in the last few days about the Eagles going out and targeting a speedy wide receiver, maybe Torrey Smith, maybe someone else. Is that something you, well, I guess I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. It sounds like from what you're saying, that's something that might change your view of Wentz if they had a weapon, or do you think it's more just the game planning that the coaches are keeping him short?
I mean, I think it's the game planning myself. I don't think their weapons are that bad. Like, none of them are. I mean, yeah, DGB is not going to run a nine routes all day. Like, he's not that type of receiver. But, Jordan Matthews and Aguilar and even Zach Ertz for the position he plays are all, above average athletes. Why couldn't one of those guys, or two of those guys start to run deeper patterns? I just don't think the offense right now, they're not tailoring it for him to throw those tougher, deeper routes. If they add Torrey Smith, yeah, that helps, but I don't think that that changes my opinion of him so much. Like, I think my biggest takeaway with Wentz is that he's still a rookie, and that's what we need to kind of go back and remember when we're evaluating him for the rest of the year.
And it was fun that he was on a primetime game on Sunday, just so I had the opportunity to really watch him in a more focused way. And I agree with that. You could tell he's a rookie. He's a very good rookie. He's playing well. He's leading an offense that's moving the ball. But yeah, he has his moments where he's a rookie, and it's pretty clear he's not, for whatever reason, he is not taking the shots downfield. He's certainly being let down by his receivers, who have had a ton of drops all season, but he is also not taking advantage of some opportunities that might be there. He's just kind of taking the short stuff, not trying too hard, making sure he's limiting his mistakes, and that can be fine. I mean, that's kind of Alex Smith's whole career, but it does limit the upside we might have thought was there.
Are you moving Kaepernick up your rankings at all? Because I slid him up into my top 20 for the rest of the year.
I don't know.
Nope, I lied. I have him at 21. I'm sorry.
Well, you have no credibility left.
Yep, and let's end the podcast. I'm going to go quit fantasy football.
I'm not. No, I am not convinced he starts beyond this week, much less the rest of the season. It's the passing is just so dreadful. And for fantasy, he's interesting. Like, he's a streaming candidate this week.
Absolutely.
But I just don't know that he's going to be the starter for very long. That's my concern. He's not a good quarterback, and I'm not sure they have the stability to really stick with him. Like, I think Chip Kelly could go to Christian Ponder at some point. I think Blaine Gabbert could come back. It's such a bad team. They're going to have to keep making moves to try and keep some optimism for the players and the fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest downside with Kaepernick is the fact that he could get benched at any moment for someone else. I just don't believe that any of the other options are necessarily better than Kaepernick. And looking at the Niners' schedule, it is, very nice from a streaming perspective. Like, the toughest matchup they have is at Arizona in Week 10, but otherwise they get New Orleans, New England, Miami, Chicago, the Jets, the Falcons, and the Rams. I don't know if you want to start Kaepernick against the Rams in your fantasy Super Bowl, but I don't know, like, just the rushing floor there just makes him really appealing to me. That's basically the primary reason I moved him up, because I think that while you're right, he could lose that job at any moment, he could also keep the job the whole year. Like, that's within the range of outcomes as well.
No, for sure. He's a really risky proposition. If you have kind of two reliable starters, I think I would love having him as my QB3 because, yeah, he's got the individual matchups. I agree with you. He's a great streaming play when he's starting. It's just the risk of I don't know what he's going to be for the rest of the season. That's why I have a hard time bumping up my season-long rankings. But yeah, for the weekly rankings, he's pretty interesting given all those matchups you mentioned.
So let's take that a little further. If you have two, solid starters that you feel good about, and you're deciding for a QB3 spot between Kaepernick and some of these other, I'm going to throw some other names at you. You tell me who you'd rather have as your QB3, Kaepernick or Fitzpatrick?
Kaepernick.
Kaepernick or Alex Smith?
Alex Smith.
Kaepernick or Flacco?
Kaepernick.
Kaepernick or Tannehill?
Kaepernick, I guess.
I mean, you've got him right outside your top 20, I think, if that's the case, because these are the guys that I ranked below him. I think Smith was the one who I have below who you would take over him. But I mean, if I go further down my rankings, you're looking at, Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz.
Right.
I guess I should throw these names at you. Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler. Would you take those guys over Kaepernick? Because I wouldn't.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And it really depends on the team because if I have an unstable quarterback position and I'm thinking I need to plug this guy in or I'm going to have to, Like if I'm holding Tony Romo and Ben Roethlisberger in a situation like that where I just don't know what's coming.
Oh yeah, you'd rather have Alex like Smith or
Brock
Ryan
Osweiler
Tannehill.
Even. Like yep. At least I know they're starting and they'll get 8 points.
That's a great distinction to make though, because it is roster dependent. You know, if you have solid QBs already, then yeah, you want the upside or the perceived upside of a guy like Kaepernick. But if you have that risk already built into your, you know, primary starters, you need that more reliable guy for sure.
Right. And so, yeah, I'm with you. If you know what you're doing at QB 1 and 2, Kaepernick is really interesting because there is that upside, the rushing potential, the matchups. And so I can absolutely see why you would be rostering him. It just, yeah, your point about the roster construction is an important one there.
Yeah. So you brought up Tony Romo, and I think this is as good a time as any to dive into Dak Prescott. He's our spotlight QB. And we didn't mention this at the top of the show, but Josh and I are going a little more unscripted this time around. So first, before we get into Dak, what are you expecting from Romo? Do you think that he starts any games this year for the Cowboys?
My guess is no. At this point, I think they probably, given how well the team is playing, I think they stick with Dak for the rest of the season and just say,
yeah,
sorry to Tony.
Barring injury, right?
Of course, yeah. Of course. I think their decision, though, is we're going with Dak.
Yep, I think that that is the right read. I think that if you are taking the opposite stance and, you know, expecting a Romo comeback, you are kidding yourself. I think it's just wishful thinking. And there is a place for that in fantasy, but when it comes to two quarterbacks, like the quarterback position is spread so thin across most leagues, even, you know, 10 team leagues, that I don't know if you can hold on to Tony Romo anymore and hope that he starts. Now, if you have Dak and you're just handcuffing, sure, that's a fine use of your roster space, but I'm perfectly okay with cutting Tony Romo from here on out. Like I have him ranked like way outside of my top 30, I think at 34, you know, behind guys like Case Keenum and Josh McCown, you know, just because I'm pretty sure those guys are going to, you know, get at least a little bit more run this year. And I'm pretty sure Tony Romo isn't, outside of some fluky injury to Dak.
Yeah, I think that's right. Unfortunately, I do have, like, I have Tony Romo in the Scott Fishbowl where it's incredibly deep. There's no quarterbacks on waivers, things like that. But yeah, I would have a hard time holding him in kind of your standard 10-team league. Even 12 is, it kind of depends on what the waiver situation looks like, because there is upside. Obviously, if you and I are wrong and we have the wrong read of it, Romo could come back in and be a low QB1 as soon as he's playing. And so, yeah, I can see holding him, but I don't know that you can really expect it given what the team has been doing. It's so hard for me to envision a scenario where they turn the keys back over to him.
You bring up a good point, though. If Romo were to come back for whatever reason, he'd probably be fine, you know, assuming that he is as healthy as he needs to be to play QB. I want to play another little game with you regarding this. It's like, if you could take any quarterback, any of the starting QBs in fantasy or in the NFL, and slot them into this offense, like in place of Dak and Romo, how many of them would you take over Dak specifically? We can think about Dak in the context of this offense, but wouldn't any quarterback be good in this offense, or most quarterbacks?
I think that's a good point. I do think that Dak's youth and some athleticism is an important factor. Like, just watching the way they run and the fact that he does keep defenses honest and they can run the QB sneak and get those few yards, I think that's important. But yeah, given the line they have, the running game they have Dez, I think that a lot of the reliable quarterbacks could step in and be fine. I don't know that it tells us a ton about Dak other than, like with Wentz, he's definitely a good rookie. It kind of remains to be seen just what heights he can get to.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, though. Like, that athleticism is what was missing with Romo, and that's a lot of why I think they need to stick with Dak, is because now that they have that, I don't want to say it's, like, unlocked their offense, but it's made them a more modern offense. You know, it's made them a more youthful offense. Like you said, he's a younger player, and that's a big deal for, like, small reasons, you know, not necessarily reasons you can find on a stat sheet. And it's not like Dak is, you know, running like Kaepernick runs. He rushes very selectively for the most part. I mean, he's active around the goal line, which is great. I mean, most of the great QBs are. Like, that's why you see Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck get, you know, a few rushing touchdowns every year, is because they're, you know, smart enough to pick those windows and pick those spots where, you know, everyone's expecting Ezekiel Elliott to get a handoff or for him to pass it to Dez Bryant. But you can't, if you're accounting for those things, it's also really hard to account for the fact that Dak might just run it himself. And I think that that's a big distinction. Having that in your offense, like, is pretty important. Like, we see that with Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't run a ton anymore, not for yardage, but he's so elusive in the pocket. He's so hard to take down. He extends plays. And that's the stuff that I think is really elevated Dak for me. And that's why I think if you put other quarterbacks into this situation, I still might rather have Dak for that reason. Is that crazy?
No, I mean, it's hard to say that it would be crazy given what this team has done, and that's kind of the QB wins mentality, but he's led the team well, and there is an unknown if you throw anyone else with a different skill set in there. I think any quarterback could be fine, could be good in this offense, but he does really bring kind of a unique skill set that combines both the passing and the rushing. But the discipline, like you said, that he's not going Colin Kaepernick and going one read, then run. It really is a great skill set for this modern NFL, like you said.
He's only ran for more than 10 yards in three games this year. Isn't that, I mean, that's kind of wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And it's just the way it looks. Like, when he's handing the ball off, he can take it back and run. Like, having that option there, the zone read, really means that a defense plays differently. Like, with Tony Romo, they don't have to assign a defender, hey, watch the quarterback, he might run it. With Dak, I think they do.
Especially when they're such a strong running team in the first place. Their line is amazing. Ezekiel Elliott is awesome. And if they're already contending with that just brutal reality, you know, that would be present no matter who the quarterback was. If you also throw in the fact that the QB could take off and make something happen with his legs, like, it just adds that whole new dimension to your offense. And I think that that's critical to their success this year. I think it goes beyond, like, his ability as a passer, and like, just that mobility is crucial. I'm very impressed with that, for sure.
It's been a good team. I mean, who would have thought it? I mean, several weeks ago, we were talking about, what does this loss of Tony Romo do to the team? Are they going to struggle? And we're really so far beyond that. We're talking about Dak, like, he's a clear QB2, probably QB1 in certain circumstances, leading a winning team. You can't bench him. Like, these are just crazy comments that we would have never seen coming 6 weeks ago.
Unless you're Anthony Amico.
Right. No, all credit to him. He definitely saw this coming. And so it's surprising, but I have a hard time saying bad things about Dak, just given the success that we've seen.
So what else do you have on Dak here for the spotlight? Anything else you want to touch on?
So just small bits of cold water. He is yet to throw for 300 yards in a game. His first two games, he had no passing touchdowns. He's had at least one in every single game since. So to me, there is a limited upside right now still. No 300-yard games. Like you said, he's only got two games with more than 12 rushing yards. And so he's had three rushing touchdowns that really help his, or four rushing touchdowns that help his numbers. And that's kind of that athleticism.
That's where you get the ceiling.
Right. And it's so, rushing touchdowns are not something we can really predict. I think 4 in 7 games is a little fluky. He's going to get some, but I think that percentage is a bit high. I don't know that the ceiling is as high as we would want to be willing to say he's probably in the QB1 conversation. I think he's pretty squarely a very good QB2 right now.
Yeah, and I ranked him as such when we talked about how I redid my rankings today. I think I had him at QB15, but I mean, that doesn't mean he couldn't move up above a guy like Russell Wilson. You know, we just talked about how he's sliding. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that he's a guy you can feel safe with at the very least going forward, because even if he isn't passing for 300 yards, he's not making a ton of mistakes. Even against a good defense like Philadelphia, just the one pick, only two interceptions on the year total. And that rushing ability, especially around the goal line, does help his floor a lot. I think that that makes him very appealing as a QB2. Now, you're right. The ceiling isn't tremendous. Like, we've only seen him top 20 fantasy points twice, once being this past week. But yeah, I mean, I like him. What do you expect now that Dez is back? Do you think that's going to help him at all?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. Dez saw 14 targets this week, and it's just a different element. It's not this Cole Beasley, Jason Witten, Ezekiel Elliott kind of 3 to 5 yard passes. It does open up the deep game, and we saw some of that. It's a great red zone weapon. And so I do think it helps the offense as a whole, and probably helps Dak's touchdown potential, just because it does make the end zone fade kind of more of an option. It gives him another passing weapon, such that the play callers might be willing to call a few more passes and not just hand it off to Zeke every time.
Well, and also it opens up the offense in a way where if the defense has to account for Dez and not just Terrence Williams and Bryce Butler on the outside, then, you know, that's just going to make it a lot easier for those secondary and tertiary receivers to get open. Like, I don't even know if Dez was in on that play when Witten caught the touchdown last night, but Witten was wide open, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of those types of plays where I don't know if that happens if, you know, Dez isn't a part of the game plan. And if defenses have to spend that much mental energy and physical energy in the actual game, preparing for and then playing against, respectively, you know, Dez Bryant, it's going to make them forget about other guys like Cole Beasley, like Jason Witten, like those other receivers. And I think that that's huge. I think that that just, you know, like I said, it's just one more option for the offense to run through. And it's very helpful.
Yeah, I think that Dez probably is harder to buy now after he had a good week, but I'd still be willing to pay wide receiver one prices. I think he is a great option going forward. And we've seen, I mean, Julio Jones came back from a foot problem and has been great after that. Dez is only 28, I believe. It's not as if he's some crazy old. He's not Brandon Marshall or Jordy Nelson coming off an injury. He's still relatively young. If you can get him cheap, he's still a guy I'm real interested in.
Yeah, I like it. And his schedule for the rest of the year is nice. He only has one tough matchup. That's week 13 at Minnesota. Otherwise, it's pretty soft. You got anything else on Dez here before we move on?
No, not on the Cowboys.
I think
at
I said
all,
Dez. I meant Dak, yeah.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. But no, I don't think on any of them. I feel bad about it because I like Romo as a fantasy asset, but I think we might be done seeing Tony Romo in that Dallas uniform, at least as a starter, I mean.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and also where Romo ends up if Dak does kind of become the enfranchised starter or vice versa. It'd be crazy if the Cowboys traded Dak at this point. You know, I doubt they would just based on his youth, but, you know, crazier things have happened, I guess. One thing we forgot to do before we move on, QB finish game. We've got, let's see, 7 games in the books for Dak. How many of his remaining 9 do you think he's a top 20 QB?
Do you have the data in front of you for how those 7 have gone?
Yep.
I don't have it pulled up.
Yep, 7 games played, 6 of which were top 20 finishes, 3 of which were top 10, and 17-plus fantasy points in every game except for week 1.
Okay. I think it's probably safe to say, I'm going to say 6 of the next 8, the fantasy 8. So
okay.
I don't have week 17 pulled up, so I don't know what it looks like. But 6 of the next 8, I think he'll be a top 20 quarterback.
6 of the next 8. I'll take 6 of the next 9. And I'm a little more pessimistic, and I do want to factor in the potential for a Romo sneaking in there. So I'll say 5 of the remaining 9. He's top 20.
Okay. Yeah, the last game it looks like is at Philadelphia, so definitely a tough matchup.
And how about top 10? You said 6 top 20. I mean, what are you thinking, like 3 top 10s?
Yeah, I think that's probably reasonable. Cleveland and Detroit stand out as the easy weeks, and he'll probably get another 1 or 2.
Yeah, Tampa, Detroit are in there too. Man, maybe I should go up to 6 top 20. I'm going to rescind my previous answer and join you on the 6 of 9 top 20s. And I'll say I might be a little more optimistic here. This schedule is pretty good. I'm just going to mirror your answers and be super boring. I'll say 3 as well. I think that's the right number.
Yeah, just Cleveland and Detroit are such bad. I mean, they're the two worst pass defenses in the league. Those seem like real easy calls for top 10 weeks.
Yep.
And just he's got several matchups that are okay. You got to think that in one of those, he gets a few touchdowns and makes the top 10.
Right. And isn't Washington really easy to run the ball against? You can imagine that their game against them in week 12 could just be a Zeke smashing, right?
Right. No, it's true.
Okay. Let's move on. We kind of mentioned how this is going to be a bit more of a casual schedule here. What do you want to talk about? Did you see anything in week 8 that jumped out to you?
Let's see. Let me scroll through real quick and see what else. I was really interested by the London game because these are two quarterbacks I liked coming into the year, Cousins and Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still optimistic about both. Dalton has worried me, has not looked to be as good of a quarterback as I thought he was showing. But I do think that we saw that Tyler Eifert is such a huge addition.
Makes a big difference.
That I really think that Dalton is going to kind of flirt with top 12 numbers by the time we're done with the season, if not a little better than that. And I don't think most people are viewing him that way right now.
Yeah, he's just kind of a boring guy to consider, and he hasn't been flashy to this point in the year. I agree. He's another guy that when I was doing my rankings, I was like, yeah, I think I need to move Dalton up higher. And he didn't make my top 12, but again, he's behind Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger, and who knows how healthy those guys are. Another guy he's behind for me is Carson Palmer, but Carson Palmer, like I looked at that box score today. He got sacked 8 times yesterday. Did you know that?
Yeah, it was really painful.
And I read today on Roto World that his left tackle is lost for the year. So, I mean, one, I think if you're a Palmer owner at this point, it's time to handcuff Drew Stanton. You just got to do it. And I'm wondering, is it time to sell high on Carson Palmer and maybe even some of his skill position teammates? You know, like I think if you could trade away Palmer and get back, I don't know, a usable quarterback and some other piece, that's a deal I'd strongly consider because he just came off a good game. We don't know if that's going to continue, especially if defenses are going to be able to get to him very easily. And if he's getting, you know, put on his back over and over again, what does that do for the receivers there? I'm not sure. I mean, even David Johnson, who, you know, even after a bad week, probably has RB1 value, like RB overall one. Value. And if he's there and you could get maybe another like top 10 running back and another piece for him, like that's something I'd consider. I'm just worried about the Cardinals in general based upon what's going on with their offensive line.
Yeah. And this was one of Palmer's best weeks of the year, despite all those sacks. And so I guess in that sense, it's a sell high, but he has had a rough fantasy season. I mean, several bad weeks. And I think
exactly.
It depends on who you're selling to. Some people may not even see this as a high point, so they may not give you much. Others may look at the week he just had in fantasy points and say, okay, I'll pay for him. But I'm with you. I think there are several questions about this offense. The line, the receivers are a question mark too. I mean, their health has been a real concern, and they've just kind of been shuffling in and out. I see a lot of reasons to be worried about Palmer. I personally have him down QB 15, QB 16 range now.
I think that's fair.
I don't trust him for all the reasons that you and I have been talking about.
Yeah, and that's the bigger takeaway for me is that the signs of him not, you know, performing to his preseason expectations, they've been there all year. And I think that now if you can maybe capitalize on this one good week, especially if you are in like a less sharp league where people don't yet realize that Carolina's defense isn't that good against the pass, you might be able to get some value from him. And it does make me worry about the offense. I'm also looking at Josh McCown and his fantasy finish on fantasy data right now. And I didn't realize he did that well yesterday. I mean, it makes sense. He was playing against the Jets, but the Browns have been kind of spouting off that they were going to go back to Cody Kessler when Kessler was healthy. Do you buy that? I mean, McCown moved the ball, you know, by the stats here. I would imagine that he has to be given a little bit more consideration, right?
I definitely think he's given some, but the problem is this team is just so bad that I don't know that they're really that concerned with moving the ball. And knowing that he'll be 38 going into next season, I really don't know that they have much interest in playing him. I think that they're likely to go to Kessler just because they are playing so clearly for the future that they're going to want to know if they need to go with another quarterback in the draft. As sad as that is, I think they need to know what they've got in Kessler.
They need to know that, and they want to lose. So it's yeah, it's the best of both worlds when you put Kessler in there. So it's kind of disappointing to me, but because I like Josh McCown. I'd like to see him get a fair shake, and you know, he didn't get that this year based on injury, which is too bad. Especially when they put him behind Robert Griffin III in the first place, it was like, yeah, I mean, McCown didn't do anything to not deserve that job besides get hurt, and that's a shame to me because I think that he could be better than that.
No, I'm with you. I mean, he's only had two games, but he's averaged great fantasy scores. I mean, he's had great fantasy scores in both of those two. The Jets were a good matchup, and he had some garbage time. But the Ravens in week two was not an easy matchup, and he did well there. I would be really interested in him if we knew he was the starter. Like, if the coach came out and said, yeah, we're just going to stick with McCown, I could easily see putting McCown up into my top 20, and I'd have to think about just how far he would go.
Yeah, I mean, things are going to get better, too. Corey Coleman's going to come back eventually. Yeah, it's a shame. Like, I agree with you. I don't think that he can hold off Kessler because the Browns don't want him to. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think that if you're, you know, desperate for a QB and he's on the waiver wire because someone, you know, thinks that Kessler's just going to come back and take that job, you could throw a claim on McCown, I think, and not feel terrible about it. What else you seeing?
The game that's going on right now, Sam Bradford and Jay Cutler. It is ugly.
You don't
It's
say.
real ugly. Jay Cutler, 3 of 7 for 19 yards. Sam Bradford, 3 of 8 for 35 yards. Just not good. And I have been very strongly anti-Jay Cutler since the offseason. Sam Bradford, I was starting to have a little bit of hope, a little optimism that he might be an intriguing bad QB2. And it really hasn't looked that way for a few weeks now.
Yeah, I think them losing both Adrian Peterson and Jerick McKinnon really hurts Bradford.
Yeah, I mean his first four games were pretty fantasy relevant, and last week was bad, and he's starting this week bad. I'm not really sure that I'm considering playing him much at all unless I'm really stuck for streaming. And it's too bad because I really, like I said, the start of the season, I thought it might be an interesting team even despite some of the injuries. And it looks like things have just kind of gone south. I mean, the Bears that they're playing right now are not some scary secondary by any means.
Yeah, but I mean that offensive line in Minnesota is not good, and we just talked about how, offensive line problems might doom Carson Palmer. I mean, think about what that sort of stuff can do to a lesser QB like Sam Bradford. Like, I'm not optimistic that Bradford is going to be anyone you want to start going forward unless you have to. I think that like what I was talking about with Carson Wentz earlier, Bradford is one of those guys who it took a little bit of time, but the league is catching up and be like, oh yeah, it's Sam Bradford. If we just try to make him do X, Y, and Z on the field, he's not going to be able to do it. And even a bad defense can execute those sorts of game plans to some extent. I don't love his receivers either. Like Diggs is fine, Adam Thielen or Thielen is fine, but these guys aren't. It's not an elite receiving core. Like you got to wonder like how much they regret that Laquon Treadwell pick. Like how bad was that pick at the time? Like looking back now, like how has he not seen the field with this crop of wide receivers they run out there?
Yeah, and it's one of the really confusing. Laquon Treadwell, their first round pick, isn't even on the field when they have four receivers on the field, and we're halfway through the season. Like, and with what you're talking about, where it's not these amazing wide receivers, it's not as if he's on a team with so much talent that he just hasn't had an opportunity. There's clearly opportunity. You would think your first round pick is going to come in and really help, and for whatever reason, it's just not the case. And yeah, I agree with you. The wide receiver core around Bradford leaves much to be desired, as does the offensive line and the running game. So doesn't leave much to say that's very good.
Red flag after red flag. I'm looking at the top tight end scores from this week, and this is pretty cool. Like the top four tight ends for week eight scoring: Gronkowski, Tyler Eifert, Travis Kelce, Jordan Reed. Just the chalkiest of chalk finish. Like I just kind of want to take your temperature on the tight end position. Are these? Do you like to trade for tight ends in season? Are these the types of guys you would be targeting right now?
I really rarely will trade for a tight end, especially because Tyler Eifert is someone that I've been able to stash in shallower leagues because he has been dropped. I think you can get tight end production without having to pay for it. Delanie Walker has been kind of dirt cheap. Gary Barnage is out there, Pitta in PPR leagues. I think you can get enough points that I don't usually like paying. I feel like you give up more than it's worth to go get one of those elite guys.
Yeah, there are just a lot of dudes, if you look kind of through the, target leaders at the position, who you'd probably feel comfortable starting most weeks. I mean, we didn't even mention Greg Olsen, who's, the tight end one, I think, on the year, and Delanie Walker, who's up there. Jimmy Graham has been pretty awesome, despite Russell Wilson's struggles. I mean, Martellus Bennett with the Patriots. And then you get into like the tier two guys, Ebron, Fedorowicz, Fleener, Zach Miller, Kyle Rudolph, Julius Thomas, Antonio Gates. Like there's a ton of dudes that you could be running out there each week. I agree with you. I don't see the need to try to swing a trade for one of those elite four, because even among, that elite tier, we've seen those guys bust on weekly basis. Bases? How does that work?
Yeah, bases. I like
Bases.
it.
All your bases are belong to us. Yeah, I don't know. Like I think it'd be great if you can get one of those guys. If you have one, you should definitely be holding them and using them. But I don't see that as a priority. I'd much rather try to shore up a weakness somewhere else, maybe at running back, wide receiver, or quarterback in a 2 QB league.
Yeah, I mean, which is the graveyard of the running back position. I've been trying to stash as many backup running backs as I can on most teams, and if I have good ones, I really don't want to trade them away, especially for a tight end.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. Which backup running backs are you targeting the most?
So Derrick Henry is a big one. He obviously had a good week this week, but before that, I was adding him. I think that the Broncos situation is another one to look at. Capri Bibbs is kind of a very cheap name to look at because Devontae Booker just isn't amazing. I mean, nothing about his kind of him as a prospect said he was going to be some amazing player. I think that there is opportunity there for whoever has it. Those are two names that really come to mind quickly because I've added them recently. I'd have to think a little bit to see who else I've been adding for a few weeks. Thomas Rawls got dropped in one of my leagues, which I think the team is really talking as if he's their starter. So if he's dropped or cheap, he's another option.
What are you doing with the Washington backfield? We were talking about this on Slack before week eight, but has Rob Kelly earned your trust at all? Is he a dude that you'd be looking to add right now?
Yes, he's in that kind of mold that we were just talking about. I'm not going to start him. I still don't think that this is a good running team. I don't think they're going to commit to the run. And he didn't have good yards per carry. He didn't look super effective. But man, just watching the game, he looked a lot better than Matt Jones.
See, that's what I'm worried about, is that maybe the reason they've looked so bad running the ball is just because Matt Jones isn't that good. And I don't know if Rob Kelly's the answer, but I'm intrigued by him. And I think that he's worth throwing a waiver claim at, throwing some fab at, just to see. Maybe, I mean, I picked him up a couple places last week, and I'm, you know, 14 fantasy points or something like that is nothing to scoff at from your running back position. I think that if he, you know, starts to repeat those types of performances, and maybe he does start to earn the trust a little bit, he's a guy, I don't know, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is potential there. I agree with you. He should be on a roster. I'm just nowhere near willing to start him. I'm not that confident yet.
So last week, we kind of did some catch-up hate on Blake Bortles. You missed the episode when Brian and I got to trash him together, and then he comes out and has like the most enigmatic game from a quarterback I've seen in a while, like in that Thursday night matchup where he just looks completely awful, just dreadful for most of the game. And then of course that terrible play leads to pass heavy game scripts. I mean, will his volume just continue to always trump efficiency? Like what do we do with Bortles? Like I hate him. I rank him low every week because he's a bad QB. And then he has a game like this and just blows my ranking out of the water. And I don't know how process-wise to weed that out, you know, and sniff that out ahead of time.
Right. There doesn't seem to be a real clear rhyme or reason to it. Like he played the Raiders, who is a great matchup, and had a bad fantasy day. Played the Bears, who are fine, and had a bad fantasy day. He did line up well against the Colts. I mean, he performed well against the Colts, and that was a good matchup. So
does Nick Foles.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Touché, Greg, touché.
Yep, that's fair enough. So Bortles, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what to do about him because he's not good. He's playing terribly, but he's somehow stringing together fantasy points in a lot of his weeks, and so it makes it really tough to know what to do with him.
Yeah, I hate Blake Bortles. It's that much worse that you can't predict it. It's like it'd be one thing if he was just bad and I knew he was bad, I'd be more comfortable with him as a fantasy asset. Like I know I don't want to start Case Keenum, but with Bortles every week, it's like, should I, shouldn't I? Like, what if he, you know, throws for four interceptions and no touchdowns? Or you know, what if he throws for four touchdowns and three interceptions? You know, these are the types of lines you have to worry about. And the fact that they put themselves into such poor scripts does give the yardage volume that you might want. I have such a hard time trusting him. I hate him. I hate Blake Bortles.
Yeah, he's not trustable. You're really disappointed if you paid that QB8 or QB9 price you had to get him.
Yeah.
But I can't say dump him. I mean,
no,
right?
You can't. Like, no, you can't. Because who else are they going to go to? I mean, they're going to keep using him, at least for this season. And his receivers are good. Like, there's reason for optimism. It's just he's not good.
Yeah, he's not. I could not agree more. Like, he came out today and said he's hiring some sort of coach or trainer assigned to work on his mechanics, which at least is mature enough to admit he has a problem going on. But it's also a problem that mid-season he's going to be trying to rework his throw.
Yeah, it's about 6 months too late for that, Blake.
Right.
What else are you looking at here?
Brock Osweiler is just bad. Completely dumpable.
Yep. Speaking of bad quarterbacks, I mean, what are the odds that Tom Savage starts a game this year? Like 110%?
Yeah, I mean, it's likely. It's only the contract that makes me hesitate. They just paid so much to move on from him already.
Well, I mean, they're not completely guaranteed in the NFL. So, I mean, at some point, if those guys, if that coaching staff wants some job security, they might have to look elsewhere, because that's a winnable division, you know, and a bad quarterback. I mean, they did fine with a bad quarterback last year.
Right.
Why is Brock Osweiler so much different? Like, I mean, the writing's on the wall. Deal with it. I mean, get Tom Savage in there and see what he can do. I don't think there's a good chance he starts like this week, but we'll see. I have a feeling he's going to get in there eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on a lot of those points, but the thing is, they've won every single home game they've had with Brock Osweiler. And as ugly as it has been and as bad as it has been, they are still very competitive in this division with him. And so I'm not sure they see it as this, we have to move on and compete. I think they're still hoping they can compete with him.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't like it, though. And he's really not. The thing I hate is how much he suppressed DeAndre Hopkins' value, who, you know, battled through poor quarterback play all year last year. And this year, it's, you can see it weighing on him. And I'm sure that part of that is, you know, defense is getting a little bit better against him as well. But yeah, it's an ugly situation. What are you doing with Dante Moncrief? He came back this week and posted a pretty good line. I'm looking at his stats here. 4 catches, 44 yards and a touchdown, led the Colts in targets. I mean, is he back to an every week starter for you?
Yeah, very, very easily. I'm all about Moncrief. I think he's very talented. I think it's a high volume offense. And if T.Y. Hilton is healthy, I haven't seen an injury update. Having those two side by side really helps, because Moncrief isn't getting just completely covered up. So yeah, I do like him. There's some tough matchups kind of for the fantasy playoff time frame, but I think this is an offense that's just going to keep throwing, and that's a good thing for receivers.
What do you, does that change your evaluation of Andrew Luck moving forward? Are you ready to kind of put him back into that top five at the position? Or did he ever leave for you? I guess that's a better question.
Yeah, he's never left, just because I haven't had names that I trusted more to put over him. So to me, it's Brady, Breeze, and Luck is arguably right there at QB3 just because of the volume. I'm not saying he is there, but that's where he starts entering the discussion for me. And he's never really moved outside that 3-6 range for me.
Yep. No, I've liked him since the preseason, and I continue to like him. And with Moncrief back, that's a huge boon. Looking at some more wide receivers in here, let's play another little game. I'm looking at some guys who are ranked in the top, let's say the top 15 of scorers in week 8 at the wide receiver position. How would you rank these guys for the rest of the season? And I'm going to sort of throw some names at you. Tyreek Hill, JJ Nelson, Kendall Wright, and Chris Hogan.
Hmm.
Like, which one of those guys do you like the most?
Probably JJ Nelson. I think there's something real there, and I have enough questions. Like, I don't think Michael Floyd is proving to be very good. So I think that right away he could step in as wide receiver 3, and John Brown has really struggled to stay on the field for various reasons, mostly health. So I think J.J. Nelson is pretty interesting. After that, I'm looking at Kendall Wright. The problem for me is I don't think that Kendall Wright is getting the target share or the snap share that I would want to really be trusting him, because it's an offense that's not throwing enough that you can say a wide receiver with just limited opportunities is going to be interesting every week.
Yeah, he's basically the Michael Floyd of that offense.
That's a fair point. Tyreek Hill doesn't interest me at all. I think that's kind of a flash in the pan thing. And then I've honestly forgot the fourth name.
Chris Hogan on the Patriots.
Yeah, Hogan's just another. I mean, I think we talked about Martellus Bennett in the past. I can't remember, but just I think it's a case where outside of Gronk and Edelman, you can't really trust week to week anybody else in that passing game, because it could go anywhere and you could also get zero.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there might have been a little bit of a revenge game factor in week 8 with Hogan. But I mean, we've seen him have big weeks other weeks this year. And I think his first game against Buffalo wasn't great shakes either. So, you know, there are the two holes to poke in my narrative. But yeah, I'm not really interested in Hogan. He's probably the bottom of the barrel there for me. I think I like Hill a little bit more than you, and I'd probably go for him over Kendall Wright. My concern with Hill right now is how healthy Alex Smith is going to be moving forward. You know, the Chiefs keep coming out and saying that this wasn't a concussion. It wasn't a concussion. Maybe they're right. Maybe it was something else. I don't know. But the question remains, like, where is Smith health-wise moving forward? Because I don't know if I trust Tyreek Hill that much with Nick Foles in there. we do agree that J.J. Nelson is the guy to target. And for all the same reasons you said, like, he's going to find his way onto the field no matter what. I think Bruce Arians even came out today and, you know, publicly stated that J.J. Nelson is a starter moving forward. So he's definitely the guy to own. Will probably be a hot waiver pickup this week. We talked about Nick Foles, and this is a two quarterback podcast, so we'd be remiss not to like spend a little bit of time on him before we wrap this thing up. My question is this: do you think the Rams wish they could have him back?
It is well, I don't know what to make of either of those, Nick Foles or the Rams. Like, they've got Jared Goff. Let's just see what he is. I really don't know what to make of it.
They can't keep playing Keenum.
Like, what's the point there?
Unless they're going the tank route, unless they're pulling the Cody Kessler maneuver that the Browns are taking. But at that point, does that mean the Goff is too good to play? Like, is that possible?
I mean, are they tanking? It feels like they're going with the Jeff Fisher, we are competing hard for 8-8 kind of mentality.
Yeah.
I just really don't know what to make of it. Like, they're fighting as if they want to win, and they just aren't good, and so they're not going to win enough that it really matters.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's just a complete avoid situation for me. But kudos to Nick Foles for showing up once in the year and actually playing pretty well. I mean, albeit against the Colts, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, he is borderline streamable if he's going to be playing again this week. And I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, all you can feel is worried, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, they play Jacksonville, which is an okay matchup. It could be another one of these ugly kind of slugfest, garbage timey sort of just weird games to watch. Bad quarterbacking, but points are eventually scored.
Yeah, but if Spencer Ware is out too, I mean, that's just more incentive for the Chiefs to pass it too, which could be a bad thing for Nick Foles, you know?
I mean, Charkandrick West isn't that bad. I mean, remember, he was kind of the breakout running back on that team not that long ago before Spencer Ware became a thing. I think there's a possibility he comes in and is okay.
Yeah, they gave him a similar contract to Ware, too. I mean, I get it. I'm just saying that ultimately, if the running game is at all less effective, like, I do think that Ware is a better back, and the reason they played him as much as they did over Charkandrick West is because he's better. If they have to go to a suboptimal running back in his place, it's a small downgrade maybe, but it's still a downgrade. If that forces them to pass more, and defenses can key on that with Nick Foles, maybe that leads to more mistakes from him. I'm not sure. It's not a matchup I would target per se from a streaming perspective. But you know, if you're desperate, you could do worse. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows that? Like you said, the Alex Smith injury. Having watched those two hits, it's a concussion.
Yep.
Like, I feel pretty confident in my medical training, of which I have none.
Thank you, Dr. Lake.
That's probably a concussion, but with the concussion protocol, you never know. He could very easily be playing this week, and then it's all a moot point having discussed Nick Foles. And then I absolutely would be interested in Smith. So who knows? Concussions are just so tough to plan for, because you really don't know until the end of the week.
Do you hate that about the way that they're reported? Because I hate that too. Like, it'd be better almost if they just automatically made you miss the next game if you had a concussion. Like, if they diagnose you with a concussion, you just can't play next week. I'd prefer that as a fantasy owner.
Yeah, it's this for fantasy, absolutely. Just like I wish they didn't have this all questionable thing going on.
Oh man, I didn't think that would bug me as much as it does. That's driven me crazy this season, because especially when I go to do rankings, like on Fantasy Pros, they put the little cue next to everyone's name. And there's so many friggin' cues that it's like I have to look at everyone's note to see if it's a real questionable tag or not a real one. Like, what was wrong with probable? Did we have to get rid of that?
Right. I really can't figure it out. It wasn't hurting anybody.
Yeah, it's really silly. Anything else you got on week 8, or maybe looking forward to the rest of the season at large?
One just quick note. You mentioned Dynasty at the start. I will say this is the point where I am very definitively on my Dynasty rosters. Like, this is the time to fish or cut bait. Like, you either are competing for the top spot, or if your goal is just playoffs to make some money, decide that now. But be honest with yourself at this point. If you're just okay and you're kind of in that 6-8 range of your league standings, just start dumping the old guys, start looking to the future, however you want to do it. But this is the time to get real honest about what you're what your real prospects are, so you don't kind of drag it out and go 500 the rest of the year for no reason.
That's a great point, and it's something that I struggle with as a like kind of a dynasty newbie. Like I don't really know. Like I think that maybe for one of my rosters, I should have done that 2 weeks ago. It's that bad, you know. But I also don't really know how to move on necessarily, because other rosters are pretty well stocked. Like the waiver wire is not good. Like it's to the point now where it's kind of just a trade or nothing scenario, and I'm not really active in trading. And part of that is I play in too many leagues. I'm focused day to day with managing, you know, 8 to 10 rosters overall, to the point where I have a hard time like really honing in on one league and trying to make trades, because one, you know, half the time you make a trade offer, it just gets immediately rejected with no explanation why. And that's just like so unfulfilling and so like unsatisfying. Like it just makes me want to do it less. But two, just like, I don't know if I have the resources to put in like the time to make good offers like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I am on the opposite end of the spectrum, to be honest. I send out too many trades and make too many moves where it can hurt my team, because I probably don't spend enough time. Like you're saying, you don't have the time to make. I probably don't make enough time. I just kind of send out something that sounds good in the moment.
Yeah, see, but I think that's better. I think where I'm coming at it is like I don't spend that much time on it either. But instead of, you know, just spending too little time and trying to make things happen, I am spending too little time to do nothing, you know, and my rosters are just stagnating. And if you know that you're selling, like at the very least, you can at least try to go out and get, you know, draft picks or young players or injured players, right? Like there's no point in, you know, hanging on to the Rashad Jennings of the worlds and things like right. that. Maybe at some point, either on the podcast or maybe written form, we could do like a roster diagnosis or something for this one league that I'm in, because I'm terrible in this league and I need your help. I need everyone's help. Help me, everyone.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be an interesting topic, and it's definitely, I think, like I said, I think we're at that point where for Dynasty, you need to do more than just your week to week. It's time to make kind of those big picture decisions here in the next couple of weeks, at least, I would say, ASAP.
Yep. So let's get this thing over with. Let me run through, you know, the regular wrap-up spiel, and then I have a philosophical question for you, Josh. This is something that came up for me earlier, but hold on that for a sec. Hold that thought. If you are listening to this podcast, first of all, thank you. We really appreciate your support. If you could subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, that would be great. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Check it out. You can find us everywhere. Be sure to check out 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBS. A lot of great writers and podcasters putting up awesome content every week. You can follow the site on Twitter at 2QBs. You can follow Josh at Lake2QBs. And you can follow me at Greg Sauce. Give us a like on Facebook. That would be great. And for longer form questions, you can email us at 2QBs@gmail.com. That's all out of the way. Josh, I was listening to this podcast earlier. It's the Nerdist podcast from a while back where they had Norm MacDonald on it. It's hosted by, what's his name, Chris Hardwick. And they ran through this scenario, which I wanted to try to apply to fantasy football. And the general idea was, thinking about, you know, living in the moment versus being able to reminisce and being nostalgic, right? They framed it in the sense of, like, if you could take, like, the most wonderful vacation in the world, like, to some tropical destination with, like, the woman of your dreams, if you could do that, but you couldn't, when you were done, you wouldn't remember it, would you still do it? I want to kind of twist that and put it through the lens of fantasy, where if you could have, like, the perfect, most rewarding fantasy football season, but at the end of the year, after you win the championship, you wouldn't remember it, or you wouldn't remember how you did it. Would you do that?
I think those two are very different, the two ways you phrased it. If I wouldn't remember it at all, probably not. If I wouldn't remember how I did it, sure.
Well, okay, let's say you wouldn't remember it at all, but then, like, suddenly on January 1st, you bank error in your favorite Monopoly card. You know, you randomly find $200 in your PayPal account and you don't know how it got there. If I could pay you $200 to basically take away your memory of the perfect fantasy football season, would you do that?
Probably, because financial incentive is probably more worthwhile than winning a fictitious game. Yeah. it's a fictional game, but the thing is, it's the memory is so important because it's just like, I didn't listen to the podcast you're describing, but it's like compound interest that while living in the moment, enjoying the moment is great. A good memory, you can relive that same moment to a high percentage for a long time to come. And so it gets so much more value. You lose so much if you just are living it in the moment and you don't remember it.
Yeah, it's those pickups you make, those matchups you win, the trades you make. Like maybe you just barely scrape by in the championship game to win it. Like that's how I would want to win it, I think. Like if you could like do that and not remember it, I just don't know if it'd be worth it anymore. I guess maybe I have to frame it in a different way to make it really tempting to not do it. Because you're right, if someone just offered you some free money for no real reason, you'd probably just take it. But what if it like halved your winnings? If you would normally win $200, but instead, if you gave up the memory of it and you guaranteed yourself the win, you only got 100. To me, it wouldn't be close. I'd much rather have the memories and not have it guaranteed, and you don't have to go through the work, because that's what makes this stuff fun to me. And I mean, that's why we're doing the podcast right now, because we love talking about football and we love, you know, like trying to project this stuff. We have no idea what's going to happen, but we like to think that we can figure it out. Like, I don't know. There's something kind of magical about that and super fun about it. Like I wouldn't want to give that up just for the monetary gains.
No, I'm totally with you. It's one of Adam Harstead's takes on Twitter that I really like, is so much joy can be derived just from the narratives, from the stories that we're able to tell. Like that's why one of the reasons we like head-to-head matchups in fantasy instead of just roto, where you're just stacking up stats all year, is because of the stories. You remember those ugly losses where you lost by 0.1 on a stat correction, and you won't forget it for the next 10 years. That's so much better than just, oh, I won, and who knows how it happened. I really can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, I think that narratives absolutely have a place in not only fantasy football, but real football. I mean, this is a game played by real people who have, you know, the same emotions to deal with that we do as we're trying to construct our lineups. They have to do that every week when they go out to play these games. You know, they're going to transfer their energy into narratives on the field, which creates narratives for us. Like that's just something we can't avoid. And if you don't believe that narrative has some play in how these guys perform, you're kidding yourself. Like, yes, stats are more important. Yes, you know, you can watch game film and figure out who the best players are, but you can never fully account with stats for like the mental side of the game, the emotional side of the game that impacts decisions, you know, things that lead to, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct penalties and, you know, just mental errors on the field, like stuff like that. I don't know. Like if you think about it in terms of that being a part of the game, that like NFL football, like how can it not be a part of our game too? Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with the general point. Like I'd probably take the cash because I'm just a sellout. Absolutely. But I hear your point. Absolutely. The memories of it and the experiences are worth a whole lot. It's a large part of the joy we get out of the game.
Oh, no doubt. Well, let's go tinker with some rosters and have some fun with it off the pod, Josh. And we'll catch you listeners next time after week 9. I hope you enjoyed this a little more, to borrow from Josh Hornsby, scatterbrained episode. And if you enjoyed it, let us know. Leave a review. Otherwise, we'll, you know, go back to the formula that we've been using on previous podcasts. We'll probably just keep mixing it up one way or the other, but the feedback would be well appreciated. Anyway, I'm rambling again, and I'm basically entered into part 2 of the Help the Podcast spiel. Let's call it quits. Catch you next time. Adios.